On the eve of the departure of the legions from Zheng Hanno, Hui sent for the priestess and the novice Tanith. It was 5 days since her disastrous prophecies to Lan and Hyrcanus, and it had taken all Hui's strength of will not to send for her earlier. When she came, she was fresher and lovelier than he remembered. While the priestess sat in the shade, Hui walked with Tanith upon the walls of the city, looking down on the one hand upon the streets and courtyards with the bustle of the army preparing for its march, while on the other hand they looked across the wooded hills and terraces where the slaves tended the neatly laid out vineyards and orchards. "I have instructed the Reverend Mother that you will join the convoy to Opet through the Middle Kingdom. You will travel with the wives of the king, and at Opet you will enter the sisterhood of Astarte, and await my return." "Yes, my lord." Her humble tone was at odds with her saucy expression. Hui stopped and looked into her green eyes. She held his gaze easily, smiling a little. "Do you truly possess the sight, Tanith?"
"I do not know, my lord."
"The words you spoke to the king, what did they mean?"
"I do not know. They are words that came into my mind unbidden. I cannot explain them."
Hui nodded and paced on in silence. There was an appealing innocence about this girl, coupled with a bright mind and a sunny disposition, which it was impossible to resist. Hui stopped again, and she waited for him to speak. "Do you love the gods, Tanith?"
"I do."
"Do you believe that I am their appointed one?"
"I do, Holy Father," she answered, with such conviction and with such transparent honesty and respect that Hui's reservations were set at rest. There was no doubt that she was an instrument which could be used, as long as it was used with skill.
"What is your destiny, Tanith?" he asked suddenly.
"I cannot see it," she answered. But she hesitated then, and for the first time Hui knew she was uncertain. "But this I know, that this meeting between you and me is part of that destiny."
Hui felt his heart swell, but his voice was gruff as he replied, "Caution, child. You are a priestess dedicated to the goddess. You know better than to speak like that to a man." Tanith dropped her eyes, and color stained her skin a dusky rose. The soft wing of hair swung forward against her cheek, and she pushed it away with her hand. Hui felt his soul shrivel with despair. Her presence was a physical agony, for no matter how great his need of her, it could never be slaked. She belonged to the gods, forbidden, untouchable. "You know that," Hui warned her sternly. "Do not trifle with the gods." She looked up at him demurely, but Hui could have sworn that there were glints of laughter and teasing mockery in the green eyes.
"Holiness, you wrong me. I did not mean as man and maid."
"How then?" demanded Hui, disappointed and with a hollow feeling in his guts at the denial.
"We will find the answer to that when we meet at Opet, Holiness," she murmured. And Hui knew that the month until then would pass slowly.
Lannan stood over a clay box in which was modelled a relief map of the great river area. In the east rose the Clouds of Bale, a mighty waterfall where the river fell hundreds of feet into a dark gorge, and the spray from the torrent rose high into the heavens, a perpetual cloud that stood upon the plains. The Victoria Falls. From here the river flowed into a deep valley, a hot, unhealthy place, where rough and rocky ramparts rose on each bank, heavily forested and rich with the ivor-bearing herds.
600 miles further east, the river entered the territory of the Draves, and ran through a wide alluvial plain which was inundated in the season of rain. And then at last the river joined the eastern sea through a dozen fan-shaped mouths. Lannan pointed out the main features of this country on the model to his generals, occasionally turning for verification to his garrison commanders who had held the river during the past year. There were 20 men in the large leather tent, and the sides were lifted to allow a dry breeze to enter, and to show the view across the wide valley below the camp. The great river itself was obscured by the tall, dark green growth of trees along its bank. There was an occasional flash of reflected sunlight from the water amongst the trees. Far to the north, the opposite escarpment of the valley rose in smoky blue tiers of hills. Our spies have marked the main towns at which the tribes are gathered. They are mostly on the high ground, a day's march beyond the river, and it is important that each tribe be attacked on the same day. He went on to assign a target to each of his commanders, a crossing place over the river, and a return route. There will be no danger of attack on the return march, as long as you break their spirit on the first day. Each of the tribes is at war with the others, and they will not rally to the assistance of each other. The only way in which we can fail is if warning is carried to the barbarians, and they scatter before our thrust. He explained the plan in detail, dwelling on the logistics of supply and routes of march, until at last Lannan set the date for the attack. 12 days from now. That will give each of your legions time to march to the crossing places and reach the towns of the barbarians. From the camp on the escarpment of the valley, Hui marched the 6th Ben Ammon to the garrison fort on the banks of the great river at Set, and here he put the legion into camp in a forest of mapani trees, which would screen them from observers on the opposite bank. Fires were forbidden during the day, and were carefully screened at night, and the men were kept busy building the rafts for the crossing. Heavy rains in the west had swollen the river, and the ford was impassable. Mago Telima, the garrison commander, was a tall, balding, disillusioned man, with the yellowish skin and eyes of the shivering sickness which was endemic along the river. He seemed pathetically glad of Hui's company during the waiting days, and Hui found his information valuable, so they dined together every evening. Hui provided the wine out of the ample stocks he had brought from Zeng. "I've kept my patrols on their usual routine, as you ordered." "Good." Hui nodded over a bowl of baked river fish and wild rice. "Have they noticed any increase in activity since my arrival?" "No, Holiness. A war party of a few hundred crossed last night and attacked one of my outposts. We drove them off readily enough. Killed 50 of them." "What do they gain by these raids?" "Weapons, and an appraisal of our strength."
"Is the whole border so active?"
"No, Holy Father, but here at Set we oppose one of the more warlike tribes, the Vindi. They're exceptional. You recall how 4 years ago they crossed in strength 20,000 of them, and overwhelmed the garrison here and left the..." "Yes," Hui interrupted. "I was with the legions when we met them at Bor." "Ah, of course. I remember now that your legion's number was on the honor list." The commander chuckled. "Of that 20,000, not one returned across the river."
"They fought well, though, for pagans," Hui conceded.
"Indeed, Holiness, they're exceptional in that respect also. And in the years since then, they've become more formidable."
"Have you seen their town?"
"No, Holiness, But I have many spies. It is set on the first slopes of the northern escarpment, where the tributary river Cal comes down from the plateau."
"And what is the population?"
"Oh, I believe them to number some 50,000.
"So large."
Hui looked up with a mouthful of fish and stared at the commander. "They're a numerous tribe, and not all of them live in the town. They tend large herds of cattle and are spread over a vast area.
Is the town fortified?
It's a large and sprawling huddle of huts, Holiness. Some of the huts are ringed with primitive palisades, but these are defense against wild animals only.
A slave refilled Hui's wine bowl and took away his empty dish. Hui cupped the bowl in his hands and stared moodily into the dark red liquid. His silence discomforted the commander, who at last blurted,
"Is it true that the king will arrive here on the morrow?"
"Yes. Yes, Lannan Hyakinus will march with my legion in the raid."
I've never been presented to him," the man murmured.
And Hui had a penetrating insight into the career of an elderly officer doomed to a minor outpost in the wilderness without patron or prospects.
"I will commend you to him," Hui promised, and saw the pathetic gratitude in the man's eyes.
One of the biremes that patrolled the river landed a century of axemen and archers on the far bank in the night, and before dawn they'd rigged the lines across the river. The river was 300 paces wide at this point, a dirty green flow of water between steep banks, which were thickly wooded and covered with reed and dense vegetation. The rafts were carried down to the river's edge and attached to the loop lines. The legion boarded in groups of 50, and the elephants walked away with the lines, drawing the rafts smoothly across the river. The crossing went with well-drilled precision. It wasn't the first time a legion had crossed the great river. There were a few minor incidents. Two hoplites fell from their rafts and sank swiftly beneath the weight of their armor. One of the rafts capsized, a struggling mass of men and equipment into the shallow water beside the bank. But they all waded to safety. A legionary entangled his arm in one of the lines and had it neatly severed below the elbow. But the crossing was completed before mid-afternoon, and Lannan turned to Hui.
"Bravely done, my sunbird. Now, explain to me your order of march."
Hui left a cohort to hold the crossing and to act as a base for his stores, a pile of dried meat and corn in leather bags. His legion would be tired, hungry, and perhaps hard-pressed on its return, and if all went as was planned, there would also be many thousands of extra miles to feed. Then, behind a screen of light infantry and archers, he began his march on the barbarian town of Kal. Here the weeks of training and hardening during the march from Zenghano showed, for although the ground was broken and heavily forested, the legion moved swiftly, in compact columns, covering the ground at a pace that pushed a steady 5 miles behind them every hour. Ahead of them, the scouts ensured that no one would carry a warning to the town. The few hundred herders and hunters and root-gatherers that were met with by the scouts were dispatched with a silent shower of arrows or a swift, clean axe-stroke. Their bodies lay where they'd fallen, beside the track, and the columns trudged on past them with hardly a sidelong glance. Hui saw that there were well-formed men and women dressed in kilts of animal skins and with tribal scars on their cheeks and breasts. Like most of the tribes from the north, their skins were a very dark bluish black. Some of them had mutilated their teeth by filing them to a sharp point, like those of a shark, and the men were armed with throwing spears and light axes with half-moon-shaped blades. The legion halted after dark and ate cold-cooked meat and corn cakes from their pouches, while the wine carriers moved amongst them filling the bowls.
"Look!"
Hui touched Lannan's shoulder and pointed towards the northern hills. The sky glowed, as though the moon was rising from the wrong direction. It was the reflected light from thousands of cooking fires.
"A rich harvest," Lannan nodded, "just as the witch prophesied."
Hui stirred uncomfortably at the mention of Tanith, but remained silent.
Her words have troubled me. I spent many nights pondering them. Lannan wiped his greasy fingers and lips. But before he reached for the wine bowl, she preaches death and darkness and betrayal by a friend. He rinsed his mouth with wine and spat it on the ground before drinking. Hui murmured, "She did not preach, Majesty. She replied to a question." But Lannan said, "I believe she is evil." "Sir," Hui protested quickly, "do not be misled by a pretty face, Hui." "She is young, innocent," he began, but saw Lannan leaning towards him and peering into his face, and he stopped. "What is this witch to you, my sunbird?" "As a maid, she means nothing. How could she? She belongs to the goddess." Hui denied his love, and Lannan leaned back and grunted skeptically. "It's as well. It's as well you are wise in all things but women, my friend. You must let me guide you." "You are always kind," Hui muttered. "Keep away from that one. Be warned, Hui, by one who loves you, she will bring you nothing but sorrow." "We have rested long enough." Hui stood up and settled the strap of his axe about his wrist. "It's time to march." After midnight, they crested the low line of hills that formed the first slope of the escarpment, and before them spread a wide open basin of land through which the dark river Cal meandered. The basin was moon-washed silver and blue, and the smoke from 10,000 cooking fires spread like a pale sea mist across the river, lying in layers in the still night air. The fires had died to pinpoints of dull red that speckled the town, and the huts were dark and shapeless, scattered thickly, without plan or pattern, a vast agglomeration of primitive dwellings. "He estimated 50,000, and he's not far wrong." Hui looked out across the basin, and beside him Lannan asked, "How will you proceed?" And Hui smiled in the moonlight. "You taught me how to hunt game, my king." His cohort commanders came for their orders, cloaked, helmeted, and grim. Hui ordered out a thin screen of light infantry and covering bowmen to the east. During the day, the scouts had captured 4,000 of the rangy little scrub cattle belonging to the Vendi. "Take the cattle with you. You remember Hannibal's ruse in Italia? It will serve us as well upon the great river." Lannan laughed delightedly and clapped Hui's shoulder when he'd explained it. "Fly for me, sunbird." "Roar for me, cry lion," Hui grinned back at him as he settled and buckled his helmet. Silently, Hui led 4,500 of his heavy infantry and axemen around to the west and lay them in a crescent shape at the edge of the forest beyond the town. Hui slept for an hour, and when one of his centurions shook him awake, he was stiff and cold with the night dew. "Stand to," he ordered quietly, and the word was passed from mouth to mouth. There was a stirring and a dark movement along the edge of the forest as the legionaries slung their axes and swords and bows and took up instead the slavers' wooden clubs.